Hey everybody, before we get started, I just wanted to jump on because we are so excited to announce that Restore registration is officially open. We can't wait to be with you again this year. It's going to be on September 5th through 7th at the Mountain America Expo Center in Sandy, Utah. That's the evening of September 5th and then all day on the 6th and the 7th. 3 days of incredible speakers, poets, musicians, and artists. We really think that what we have planned will blow you away again this year, so you won't want to miss it. Go to faithmatters.org/restore for tickets and we'll see you there.
Hey everybody, this is Tim Chavez from Faith Matters. The political climate in Arizona has been unseasonably warm recently, frequently making national news. And it seems that political tribalism has even caused division in some Latter-day Saint wards and stakes. It raises the question that many of us have started asking, could political identity begin to eclipse religious identity in some parts of the church? In part one of a two-part series on the church in Arizona, Bill from Faith Matters sat down with Mesa, Arizona Mayor John Giles and Councilwoman Julie Spilsbury about division that erupted around an LGBTQ non-discrimination ordinance. We think this is a really important conversation, and we hope that you enjoy listening.
Okay, everyone, this is Bill Turnbull, and we are here today with Mayor John Giles from Mesa, Arizona, and Councilwoman Julie Spilsbury. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
It's good to be with you.
It's scorching hot in Arizona right now. So.
It's warm.
It's only 100 degrees right now.
Oh, it's just starting to get warmed up.
No big deal.
Well, and maybe that reflects the political temperature too, moderating a little bit. But you've had some interesting times in Arizona and in Mesa.
Bill, can I begin by with a shameless plug? We just launched our competing podcast to yours. It's called "It's Always Cool in Mesa." Now, since you brought the temperature up, it's not necessarily about the temperature, but it's about all the cool things in Mesa, Arizona.
Really cool. Okay, well, we wanted to. You've had an interesting last few months in Arizona. We'll probably talk about some broader issues toward the end of this conversation, but we want to start by talking about, so a few months ago, I can't remember when it was, I was on the phone with Tom Christofferson, who's a member of our advisory board, and he just happened to be on his way to the mayor's home to film you could tell us more about that, Mayor Giles, but, and he made me aware of a non-discrimination ordinance that was in the midst of this political fight in Mesa. Julie, I then learned that you had a lot to do with getting that going. So can you just frame that for me? Maybe Mayor Giles start and Julie pitch in wherever you feel.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. Well, this actually goes back years, frankly. I was elected in 2014. And at that time, you may recall, the whole country, you know, was non-discrimination ordinances were turn on CNN, you know, and that's what people were talking about. And North Carolina was being boycotted and Houston had referendums. And it was just the national issue. And it was very much part of the agenda for HRC and other LGBTQ advocacy organizations to be out encouraging these ordinances and these statewide laws. So, and locally, our Human Relations Advisory Board had recommended that Mesa take up this issue. So when I arrived on the scene, this was on our plate, and at the urging of Apple and other major employers, you know, it was clearly something that we needed to talk about. So back then we started engaging, everyone listening to this will know that the LDS Church was in the middle of all these conversations as well with the Salt Lake ordinance and the statewide law in Utah. So, and Mesa, we might as well just say it, Mesa has the reputation for being a Mormon, quote unquote, you know, a city, even though actually our population is probably at or below 10% LDS, but we're a city of 500,000 people. So that's still, you know, well, more than half. So we got 50, 60, 70,000 LDS in our city, but it's relatively about a 10% population. So
you,
for all
you two are Latter-day Saints to be.
Oh, right. Yes, we are.
Correct.
We are so, two of three on a seven with the mayor and six council members. There's three of us that are LDS.
So would you say there's a sort of an outsized political influence of Latter-day Saint people in Mesa, 10% of the population, but perhaps more influential politically?
Yeah, I think it feels like a lot more than that because a lot of them are the ones who are involved in everything, right? So
okay.
Right. If you look at our legislative representation and everything, the LDS population is over, but we punch above our weight politically, I guess would be one way to say it. But when it comes, and you know, people know LDS people vote, right? So it is an impactful part of the political equation in Mesa for sure. So anyway, we spent a lot of time and energy working on this back in 2015, 16. Ultimately, we saw it was a very divisive issue, and we decided to kind of let things mature a little bit, and so we put it on the shelf. January of this year, when Julie and I were both being sworn in after we were elected on the same cycle, I was reelected. Julie was elected for the first time. We let it be known that this was an issue that we thought was the time was right to bring it back. And so we did so. And on March the 1st is when we had our council meeting and had a 5-2 vote adopting a non-discrimination ordinance in the city of Mesa. We think we pat ourselves on the back. We think it's a very good ordinance. We went through a lot of iterations, a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions, and came up with an ordinance that I think can be a model in other cities. In spite of that, there was pushback, and immediately, March the 2nd or 3rd, a group filed for a referendum to take it to the vote of the people. And that is when Tom Christofferson and Julie and I and others, you know, got engaged in responding to that effort.
Okay. And would you say that process in crafting this ordinance, who are the stakeholders? Who are the, you mentioned the Utah, well, some people call it the Utah Compromise, this that surprised a lot of people. I think that was in 2015, right? And it was, I think it was representatives of the LGBT community. The LDS Church was heavily involved in that. And legislators, obviously. What, on your side, how did that look as it was being crafted?
All of the same. I mean, but back in 2015-16, I met, you know, in Salt Lake with people, talked a lot with LDS Church attorneys, also met many times with the ACLU and HRC and others on the LGBTQ side. There was a lot of due diligence that went into it. Our city attorney at the time just had binders and binders. You know, she spent months and knew where every semicolon was in every, you know, city ordinance across the country. So it was a very engaged process. And then we rebooted that again in this year as we retooled to reintroduce it.
And did the LDS Church officially play any role in this? At the institutional level, either locally or at the or from Salt Lake.
Well, I'm not doing a good job of engaging Julie in this conversation. I apologize. So I'll try to be as concise as I can. Like I say, the first time around, yes, I mean, I met with church officials. I met with public affairs. Curtin McConkie was involved. I mean, it was the church was very hands on. This time around, after we had it drafted, I sent it to the church and I said, this is just a, you know, kind of a courtesy shout out. You know, please take a look at this. And I did that not just with the LDS church. We did it with everybody, you know, the LGBTQ organizations, other faith groups, the evangelical political folks, you know, everybody got equal access to weigh in on this. The LDS church looked at it and they said, hey, you know, what we need is in there. And so, and we all agreed at the time, thank you. You know, no need for you to play a public role in this. You and everyone else, you know, we're just soliciting your critique of this ordinance. Now, once the referendum issue came up, I called them back and I said, you guys, the folks at the front of the parade of this referendum are our church members.
Now, to be clear, the referendum was pushing back against this ordinance. There was a referendum to what? To what was the referendum, basically?
Julie, why don't you take that one?
Okay, well, so yeah, a lot of people were not happy that it passed and didn't want it for our city. And so Well, or they wanted the voters to decide. So the referendum was to get enough signatures so that it could go on the ballot, which wouldn't be till fall of 2022. Mm. And this was supposed to go into effect June 29th. And so it wouldn't go into effect and it would be held off and cost everyone a lot of money and cause a lot of discord in our community if it kept going. But they did get enough signatures. Until I don't know if you want to take it over there.
Well, so this was a pretty Herculean effort. You know, we had to the other side was they'll say that it was a grassroots effort, and it was to a large extent. There was a lot of, you know, particularly in the LDS community, a lot of volunteers that went around and circulated petitions. It was also a paid effort from the kind of Christian right, religious right organizations. They contributed tens of thousands of dollars to this, and there were paid circulators that were out getting these signatures as well.
They had 30 days to get a little over 9,000 signatures, but then you need a buffer. So that's a lot of signatures to get in 30 days.
Yeah.
And they did it.
And so in response to that, we mounted an equally strong, or actually stronger, effort to challenge those signatures, and we were successful when we scrutinized those, you know, whether or not they complied with the legal process. They acknowledged that they fell short, and so they dropped their efforts.
Okay, so the ordinance will go into effect. Okay,
yes.
So that's the latest.
Yes.
So it's really interesting. Is you seem to have the institutional church on the one hand saying, you've covered all the bases for us. Our concerns are probably about religious freedom. Would you acknowledge that there are genuine concerns when these issues come up around religious freedom? And what would those be? What were those issues that you had to address with this ordinance?
Well, I'm going to keep going back in time. 2015, I recall, sitting in my kitchen and listening to a press conference, you know, from three apostles and other organizational general authorities of the church on this topic. Elder Oaks at the time said, "I call on local elected officials to adopt ordinances that protect religious freedom and protect the civil liberties of the LGBTQ population." So I believe that you can do both. They're not mutually exclusive. And so I think we can have an ordinance, and I think we do have an ordinance that passes muster with the LDS Church and others who are concerned, rightfully so, about religious freedom, but at the same time provides the protection that the LGBTQ community so much deserves and is anxious to get.
So specifically, what are those rights? Give us the bullet points on both the LGBT civil liberty side and the religious freedom side, and what was protected.
Great. Here's my short answer that Julie will flesh out. Obviously, there's three components to a non-discrimination ordinance. There's housing, employment, and public accommodation. The Utah Fairness for All legislation is great on housing and employment, kind of, you know, not entirely embracing public accommodation. To pass muster with the LGBTQ folks, you need to check all three boxes. To pass muster with the religious freedom folks, what the gold standard is, hey, exclude us. You know, just recognize that we have a First Amendment right to practice our religion, and city ordinances can't, you know, erode our First Amendment right to practice our religion. And so that's what our ordinance does. It's just a flat out, we exclude churches, we exclude religious organizations, don't pretend that this ordinance has anything to do with them.
So basically, says you can't discriminate in housing. You can't not rent or not sell a property, for example, to an LGBT person. So housing and employment, basically the same thing. You can't deny employment or discriminate other ways in employment, right? Does it go beyond that? That kind of pretty much cover it?
I'm sorry, Julie, go ahead.
No. You do. I had more of the touchy-feely side of this, and he has a lot of the knowledge, which I've learned and can talk to great lengths to. But that is the biggest difference, I think, with our legislation, was that the public accommodations was addressed. So the Utah Compromise has the housing and the employment. the Equality Act that's being presented to Congress doesn't have any of the religious protections or protections for schools or anything like that. But what the church has stated is that they support the Fairness for All legislation that's being proposed. And that actually does have accommodations, public accommodations.
Explain public accommodations for our audience. What do you mean by that?
There's probably a better way to explain it, but the main thing that I think it does is that it allows people to use the bathroom of the gender they identify with. So it does a lot more than that, but that would be the sticking point. So most people are fine with housing and employment issues. They're not okay with the transgender woman using the girls' bathroom. And I think that's where a lot of people got hung up on.
Is that where the energy came from in the opposition to this? Is that where really, was it really that issue?
I think so.
Okay.
What would you say, Mayor?
Yeah, I think most people, including in the LDS community, have evolved, you know, on recognizing the legitimacy of gay rights, and homophobia is wonderfully, you know, less evident than it has been, you know, when we were younger. We still got a ways to go when it comes to transphobia. And so that is, I don't remember talking throughout this process with anybody who said, no, I think we ought to be able to, I don't want to treat gay people, you know, the same as I have to treat other people. Never heard that. What they all will focus on, it was the issue that Julie identified. And even like in Houston, where this ordinance, one of these ordinances was set aside, the opposition will just boil it all down to, this is the bathroom ordinance. This is about, do you want a transgender woman in your little girl's bathroom? That's the emotional issue that frankly is not supported by any data, not supported by rational, you know, discussion.
What do you mean? It turns out not to be an issue in practice. When these ordinances actually take place, doesn't come up as a problem.
There are statistics that show that ordinances like this are in 322 cities across the nation with no increase in incidents, public safety incidents. The state of Arizona, there's 7 cities, including Phoenix and Tempe, that have had these ordinances. Phoenix and Tempe have had them for 7 years. Is that right? Without ever issuing any kind of citation, right? So the fear going around, and on top of the bathroom issue, there was just a lot of rumors going around that just weren't true. But all it takes is someone posting or going around and putting it on people's doors, 10 bullet points of what this ordinance would do, and then it gets reposted. And maybe 9 of the 10 aren't true, but it doesn't matter at that point, right? So it was just really, I was in the thick of it on social media, and I felt like I was just trying to put fires out everywhere I went. And it was so hard to try to get people to come back to like what the actual truth was. There was a rumor going around that the city of Mesa wouldn't let you say ma'am or sir. I don't even know where that one came from. I mean, there were things like that going around. Lots and lots of rumors about schools, which this doesn't touch schools. Schools are exempt because they have their own governing board. Lots of rumors about sports. Just a whole gamut of things that we're trying to address, that they weren't issues. The transgender fear, the fear people have of that a man could be in the bathroom with their little girls was terrifying to some people. But if you talk through the issue and you say, look, they're not safe. A transgender woman's not safe in a men's bathroom. And they probably already are using it for one thing, but they walk in and they go to the bathroom. You know, they shut the door, go to the bathroom. They come out, hopefully wash their hands like the rest of us should wash our hands and leave. And so the fear to me, I mean, I have 5 daughters. I'm a mother, right? Like hopefully someday we'll have lots of grandkids. I would never vote for something that would put my children in danger. I've always been afraid of public bathrooms as a mother, right? You don't go in, you don't let your kids go in by themselves ever. You know, you're always watchful because bad things happen. Bad people do bad things. And having an ordinance all of a sudden wasn't going to open up the floodgates to have people who are sitting at home. Oh, man, I wish I could pretend like I was a woman so I could go in the bathroom and do bad things to people. Like, it's just, to me, it was very unfounded.
Right. Yeah. They were so opponents seemed to be okay with the idea that there could still exist discrimination on housing and employment, because if that's the cost of possibly avoiding a restroom incident, it's worth it. Is that?
well, I think, frankly, federal law has evolved on this, you know, to the point now. I mean, there are Supreme Court cases that and the Biden administration, you know, made announcements as to how they're interpreting things. So housing and employment, the Mesa City ordinance didn't move the ball, you know, an inch on that. Those things, if you thought it was okay to discriminate in housing and employment before the Mesa ordinance, I'm sorry, you were wrong. You can't do that regardless. So we moved the ball forward, though. We did move the needle on public accommodation.
Yeah. Okay. So then someone might say, well, is this a solution in search of a problem? Why
a lot of people said that.
Julie, tell them why that's not true.
A lot of people said that. Like, you're creating something that's not needed. Everyone in Mesa treats everyone nice. No one discriminates. Like, these are all the things we heard, right? But for the people who have been discriminated against and for their families, this was huge. This was absolutely needed. It meant the world to these people, our brothers and sisters, and to their families. And it does... We want to be known as an accepting, welcoming city. And this is a great way to do that.
Sort of an act of solidarity by the city of Mesa in that sense. Is that
okay? Yeah. If for no other reason, if this was just a feel good, you know, public policy statement, heck yeah. I mean, that's a great reason to do this. I mean, look at the LGBTQ kids that are taking their lives and suicides and particularly in the LDS church and in other communities. If we can send a message and it's not something that gets, you know, a punitive thing that gets enforced with court cases and citations, but it's just an awareness campaign where we give, I had friends, I was in high school in the late 70s and 80s. I had friends that came out later as gay, and I don't know how they didn't commit suicide. I mean, I look at the tragedies, you know, that are scattered throughout, you know, our community and other communities. And if we can do something that helps a little bit on that, that's a heck of a good reason to do this.
Yeah. So let's get to the issue of, I think it's interesting. If you look at the history of our church on this particular issue, you had Prop 8 in 2008. Which I think everyone just realizes was a mistake, right, at this point. And the church really came a long way in a very few years on that issue, culminating in, I think, in the Utah compromise. So the institutional church may have come a long way, but what I'm hearing, a lot of this opposition was almost operating in contradiction of that, of the institutional position of the church when it comes to this grassroots level and circulating the petitions and maybe also the energy. Where was the energy coming from? I'm getting to this question of how Latter-day Saints are engaging in the political sphere. What's your experience among your constituents in Mesa?
I'll start. So I was the newbie on this one, right? Like I got elected in August, actually, but I didn't get sworn in until January. And then the mayor goes and throws this in like the first week. So there were two newspaper articles that came out about it in January. It was posted on the website. There were several study sessions before the actual vote. But the mayor had actually come to me months before and just said, hey, you need to know that this is going to come up. And I don't know how you feel about it. And I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but you should probably start thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And due to the pandemic, we had a lot more time on our hands. And so in our family, with my returned missionary college age daughters and my husband, all of us were kind of on this search for truth and opening up our eyes and our hearts and our minds. And so we'd been listening to Faith Matters podcast, and we were listening to the Listen, Learn, Love podcast, and we were reading books, and we were kind of, you know, changing our view of some things that we grew up hearing or were taught. our hearts were being opened big time. And you can't tell me that that wasn't God doing that in my life, because he knew I was going to be in this position. So I had spent months and months researching this, talking to a lot of people on both sides. And when it finally came up to the vote, there's seven people that were voting. So we only needed four votes. And so we had our three Democrat council members that were for sure going to vote for it. And we had our mayor that was going to vote for it, even though he's a LDS Republican. Anyway, so there was our four votes. So my vote wasn't needed on this. And I was the conservative LDS mom. So I was going to go into the city and protect our, you know, families from evil. And so when more of the public and my constituents and people in Mesa started hearing about this and finding out about it, they were very, very upset, especially because the first thing that went out was from a far right conservative public policy group that had a lot of things in it that were wrong, but that went out like wildfire. And I ended up getting 1,107 emails over this issue. Probably 800 of them were negative. If I had to guess, I would say 85-90% of them were from LDS people that were very mad and very angry that we were even thinking of doing this. And they felt like, because they voted me in, that I should listen to them and I should vote according to what they wanted. I was told by several people that I needed to repent and that I was going to hell and that the Lord was displeased with me, and the list goes on and on, right? So, but at the end of the day, like, I had been researching this and studying it and praying my heart out about what to do. And so I knew what the right thing to do was. I just knew I was also going to make a lot of people very angry and unhappy. So, sorry, I get a little emotional about this because it was really hard. So one of the points I wanted to make was, as we started researching how the church felt about this and the different legislation that they supported and the different statements that were made and looking at websites, I mean, it couldn't be clearer to me that in the city of Mesa, we were doing exactly what the church was asking us to do, that we were providing legislation that protected those religious freedoms and protected these LGBTQ rights. And so I think I tried to spread that as much as I could among the LDS population, sending articles and statements. And even my own mother, I think, as she realized, like, oh, the church is okay with this, then it's probably okay. You know, like, I think people just don't know. And if they're not, I've been on this, you know, journey of discovery for the last year. So I had taken a long time to come to this place. And so I think a lot of people, look, we taught a lot of things wrong in the church for a lot of years. And I think some people just haven't heard or learned or realized there's some learning to do there and some growth that we could do there, because we need our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. Not just because it's the right thing to do, not just because it's what Christ wants us to do, but because they have gifts and talents that we need, you know, as members of a church to gather Israel.
Yeah. Wow.
Amen.
That was a really long answer.
It was a great answer. And I'm aware of just how emotional, I mean, that's overwhelming to receive that many personal, and you read them all, because you probably,
I read every single one.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to carry. But you're handsomely compensated as a city council person, so I assume that it's well worth it. Yeah. Mayor, do you have any comments on that? I just want to move on to one more question before we finish. But
I just want to underscore what Julie said, which is I think that what we did is in lockstep with what the church has asked us to do. And when, you know, this, I go back to 2015 when Elder Oaks issued this apostolic admonition to people like Julie and me to go do this. And I remember at the time when I heard it, I don't think it was the spirit, because the thought that entered my head was, oh crap, I don't think the Spirit necessarily uses that vocabulary, but
that's how I hear the Spirit. So I don't know.
Well, I thought, man, I don't need this. I don't want to wade into this. I mean, I'm going to get, I'll be full of arrows, you know, before I can turn around if we take this up. But I think it was the right thing to do. And for those who care enough about, you know, learning what the church's policy is on this, they'll say, man, this is exactly what an active LDS person can and should support and endorse and be at the front of this parade.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. And especially when you go through a process where you've carefully considered options, brought all the stakeholders to the table, there's been a very deliberative process here. And then it ends up getting, you know, almost shot down by these 10 little bullet points or whatever, like these little social media posts that are, you know, that just lack, that aren't aware of the process that went into it. And yes.
Bill, let me add something to the previous answer. You were asking again, you're asking, did the church take a position on this? And again, I said, we didn't want the church to take a position on this, because why include the church if you don't have to? But once this referendum came up, I went back to the church and I said, I apologize. I told you I wasn't going to ask you for your support on this, but I'm asking for your support on this, because this is going to become a Mesa Mormon thing, right? And so whether I like it or not, whether you like it or not, you know, we're both front and center here. And so the church, through their regional authorities, issued a statement. And they reiterated what they'd said a million times before, but they did it in the context of what's going on in Arizona right now. And so it was a letter to the people of Arizona saying, let us remind you what the church's position is on this. We support municipal non-discrimination ordinances. And it's not just happening in Mesa. Since Mesa, it's been Scottsdale and Glendale, and there are others, you know, that are on board, that are considering this. And so it was. So I was like, wow, thank you, church, you know, for sticking your head up.
And it was signed by Kyrsten Sinema, and it was signed by like 6-7 other religious organizations, plus some of the LGBTQ communities. It was an open letter signed by lots. So continue. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Julie. It was not an LDS church statement. It was the LDS church signing on with a lot of great stakeholders, LGBTQ and religious and political. And I think Julie and I would both say this, it was what was discouraging after that was the way that members of our LDS community went through contortions, you know, to say, oh, well, the church didn't mean that, or it's not what it looks like, you know, the church, we're the ones that are correct, you know, in saying what the church thinks about this. And, you know, so what do you do? You know, if people will see and read and think what they're going to want to see and think and read.
Yeah. So the broader, we have only a couple of minutes here. I want to get your comments just on the broader political situation in Arizona. We referred to this at the top of this conversation. I think we realize that it's a little bit of a different ball game in Arizona when we saw this rally at which our illustrious Senator Lee from Utah went down and called Donald Trump Captain Moroni. That had to have him cringing at the church office building. I thought that was interesting, because I don't think he could have ever said that at a public gathering here. I may be wrong, but there was so much there was a huge gathering of LDS people, right? And then there's since been I think the state legislature has approved an audit of the results of the presidential election in Arizona. And from what I understand, the people in charge of the audit are specifically Trump people. So I'm just curious about what's going on in Arizona, guys, and what role is the church playing here? We're in a very tribal era politically, and I really believe that the church is being called to rise above that. But I wonder if we will. I think we can. I wonder if we will. Any thoughts about the situation in Arizona as we close here.
I'll make a few comments.
Two Mormon Republicans in Arizona.
I have a whole lot I could say and probably a lot I shouldn't say. So, but I will just say, I think as polarized as politics is right now and viewing everyone as your enemy, I mean, President Oak's talk was specifically about this. And my hope is that we can let that go. Like, how do you teach someone about the gospel of Jesus Christ if you view them as your enemy? And I think that we have to let that go. Whatever your political leanings are, you have to recognize the goodness in people and their good intentions.
Underscore what Julie said. It's been heartbreaking, you know, to go to church. And I mean, I've been in the same ward and in the same neighborhood for 25, 30 years. And so I love my church family, my ward family. I mean, like my own. And so it's been horrible to see how polarized, you know, that this has made our church family. There's, you know, our state president, asked us to wear masks, and he comes to a meeting and he looks out at a congregation and half the people are not wearing masks. And it's hard, what do you do? This is my family. And I thought these are people that would take a bullet for me. And it comes to find out that they think I'm crazy. And if I read their comments on Facebook, it's not very kind. And so we are, thankfully, I think we're all praying for a reconciliation and a healing and to get past this and to get back to the situation that Julie described, where there's no question that we love each other and it's okay to disagree on politics, for goodness sakes. And we just need to love each other. And I do think there's a role for the church to play in this. I appreciate when the church gives us wise counsel and at the same time reiterates that, as Elder Oaks did in the last conference, you know, that don't think that the church is a political party or that you can't, there's no room for diversity of opinion on politics in the church.
Yeah. I don't know how we come together when we don't, when we're so heavily involved in these information channels, silos that we, so we need to model that too. I really appreciate, we're bumping up against time here. I really appreciate the time here. Maybe we can take up this conversation a little bit more later, but what a delightful, thank you for what you've done for representing your constituents there in Mesa, the hard work of governing. It gets really personal. It's difficult to imagine why you would want to get involved in the political life, but thanks for taking those bullets. And thank you for spending a little time with us today. Just remarkable.
Thanks for the opportunity, Bo.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk later.
All right.
Thanks so much for listening, and a big thanks to Mayor Giles and Councilwoman Spilsbury for coming on. And as always, if Faith Matters content is resonating with you and you get a chance, we'd absolutely love for you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen on. It definitely helps get the word out about Faith Matters, and we really appreciate the support. Thanks again for listening, and as always, you can check out more at faithmatters.org.